and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 611.
That's right. This time we're talking about Green Lantern 25, which is now obviously out. It's been out for about a week. You know what? There's things to talk about, so let's just dive right in.
The Starbreaker supremacy begins. I bet that gets your panties all tight, touching the chair, just hearing that. Woo! We've been waiting for this for a long time. So I'm going to try to give a real bare bones review on this because there's a lot, as Chad alluded to, how much meat there is on the bone again in this is debatable, but there are things to discuss. So I don't think I'm going to go as heavy into detail going, as I'm doing the actual review, and we'll just delve into some of these topics as in the discussion part. So we begin on in order of consequence. We have Ellie Rose sneaking behind Kelly's back, trying to figure out what's going on in that with that door in her head, which she eventually does, and it's not. And we don't know what happens, but obviously what she sees is bad news, and she tries to warn Kelly to take the gauntlet off, but that doesn't happen till the end of the book. But the layers of this start happening in the beginning when Ellie Rose is sneaking back in to look at the door. We have the seven power batteries on OO with the Green Lantern one in the middle, just like the Spectrum should be. That's the only one that's powered up, which makes sense. It's the only one that's still functional. And the plan is to power them all up, but they need the crystals from Gemworld to be the last missing piece of the puzzle, which, of course, Starbreaker at the Castle of the Desolate Stone, his power battery is now assembled too, but he also needs the crystals in order to power it up to get his plan in. So Carol, Kilowog, Guy, Hal, they end up going to Gemworld, where the plan is to get the Song Stones, as they're called, to power up the power batteries. We have an interesting little dialogue, ever so briefly, when we pick up on where Aya was resurrected, and Aya talking to everybody on the Interceptor, with a cute little line, which again we will break in, we will discuss what we think it really means or what they want us to think. But Kyle and company are on the way back to Oa because they get there by the end of the story. Guy is the one who dives in headfirst to get the stones. He gets them, and of course, as soon as he gets them, Starbreaker is there with his children of the Fractured Spectrum. Guy has a little bit of moment of redemption, taking on Sorrow, because since he was kind of like paralyzed by Sorrow the first time they fought, which is how he lost the Book of Oa, if I remember correctly. He was in that confrontation. We get introduced to some of the other Lanterns on the Fractured Spectrum. We have Envy, Disgust, which we already saw coming from the Hal Spectre issue, Jealousy, even though Envy and Jealousy are pretty damn close. All this eventually leads to, not surprisingly, the bad guys beat the good guys, even though we are lucky enough to still get one of the three crystals, because there were three crystals that the guy took. That's what they wanted to power all the power batteries with. Sorrow takes two of them. We get one, which, as they say, it has to be enough. They go back to Oa. At the same time, Sorrow is putting his two crystals into the central power battery at the Desolate Stone. The one crystal basically is used by Kyle. He goes white again, becomes a white lantern. This is where Razor and Aya have their ever brief reunion. Kyle does his best to power up all the other central power batteries. Same time, Starbreaker's battery goes live. This is where Ellie in the story actually warns Kelly by taking her glove off. You got to take it off because before he decides, whoever he is. And as all these power batteries are coming online together, everything turns to a shade of gray. And all of a sudden, nobody can feel anything anymore because apparently the emotional spectrum is dead and or being drained, which was, we can assume, Starbreaker's plan all along. So the next issue, Starbreaker supremacy continues in Green Lantern Corps 7. No emotions detected. A ring to robots in a wall. Oh my. And I know where the creative team is on this one. I paid special attention to it, so let me go back. Starbreaker supremacy part 1, Jeremy Adams, artist and cover artist Romanico, Romulo Fajardo Jr., colorist, Dave Sharp, letterer. The variant cover artist, Carlos De Anda, Salvador LaRocca, Chris Campana, Norm Rapmuno, and Luis Guerrero, and with David Paratore. Glow in the dark foil variant cover artist, say that 8 times quick, Stevan Subic, assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor Paul Kaminsky, another Superboy credit to Jerry Siegel, and that's this issue. That was Kurtzky-like, wasn't it?
So my thing that I said to Mark when this issue came out is, my critique of this is, have we just read too many comic books at this point? Is that why this comic is what it is to us? Is it our own fault? Because we predicted this, or I think actually you're the one who actually said this. I could be wrong, but one of us said this, that we were going to get to the point where the race to build the power batteries would be that Starbreaker was going to win. And we were even more sure of that because we had gotten the announcement of the second part of this, that it was like the Starbreaker supremacy. So we knew they were going to lose this race the entire time they were building up to the finish line. So it made the buildup pointless and it made the reveal pointless. Once. Are we just reading too many comic books, man?
No, that's where I'm going with this. I don't want to blame us or the readers saying, I don't think the storytelling style is working. And I think there's problems. There's so many problems in the beginning of this issue. And we're going to talk about it in a second. I don't think so. You know what this does remind me of? This whole storyline up to this point. And you can make a case objectively. It's not even just a storyline, because there were plenty of examples of this in the first arc, the never-ending first arc, the 18-issue arc that we had with Jeremy the first time around. But it reminds me of Spaceballs, when Dark Helmet is speaking and explaining why evil always wins, because good is dumb.
Now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
They do stupid things all throughout these stories, and they can't ever anticipate ahead. It's literally like in this whole arc, Starbreaker and Sorrow didn't have to do a damn thing, really. They just had to sit back and wait, or just. It's almost like put a tracker on Hal Jordan, or put a tracker on Hal Jordan and Guy, or just keep listening. Put your ears to the ground and just keep listening, because they're going to lead you to everything you need. It's like that. It's like the thing we talk about once in a while, because it still irks me in the original 2 Tomb Raider movies. It's like, oh, we need all these pieces of a whole for it to be a problem. So you get one piece, and instead of destroying the one piece you have, you take the piece that you have to go get the other piece. So, of course, inevitably, the bad guy gets all the pieces, and now they actually are a real threat. When if you just didn't bring the piece with you or destroyed it, the threat doesn't exist anymore. It's just frustrating. It's not the most frustrating thing in this issue. There's plenty of things here.
Yeah. I just wanted to get into some of the other stuff before we got carried away with the mistakes, because once we start with the mistakes, we're gonna focus on those only. So I wanted to talk about everything else first.
Okay.
There's obviously a problem with the art and or story or both that we'll get to. But otherwise, in terms of style and execution, I think I like the art in this one. It could just be because of the colors. We get some color differential by going to Gem World. So that's fun. The big crazy dragon that they get to fight.
Henry?
Yeah, Henry, that, you know, that looks really cool. Great design. I like Carol's kind of construction of her jet. We get a panel of her like masking up, and then you can see the jet coming together behind her before she finally like figures it out and like has the whole construct together. So that looks really cool. Lots of really just great shots, you know, Hal riding Henry and all this kind of stuff. I think artistically, in terms of, you know, the way things are drawn, and color wise too, got to give a nod to the colorist there. This is a great looking issue, great looking book.
Yeah, I would agree. There are some things with the art that doesn't work either, like how Guy miraculously grows a mohawk on the way to Gem World just for it to disappear like two panels later. So that's still a mistake, but we're talking art. So that's just a clear artistic mistake, because I'm sure Jeremy didn't write, Guy has a mohawk. I'm sure that's just somebody effing up, and which there's a lot of different things, like Chad said, we're going to get to. But generally speaking, yes. The stuff on the Castle of Desolate Stone looks great, even though I hate all these new redesigned power batteries, including the green. I don't like them all, at all.
That they don't have the funnels where the lights come out.
And I don't like having a handle or something close to that or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, the Gem World Dragon looks cool. The foreshadowing probably of what we've seen on the cover, what they're going to do with the entities, riding the entities, putting reins on them and stuff like that. Hal's kind of like getting his training wheels on, doing that with Henry, since that seemingly is what he's going to do with Parallax, if that cover is actually accurate coming up. I would say, generally speaking, other than some glaring mistakes, like I mentioned with Guy, the artwork is pretty good in this.
Yeah, for sure. I like seeing that Kyle has, you know, kind of gotten a handle on it. He's very clearly really struggling at this, like, cause he's trying to force it. He's trying to will it, for lack of a better term. He's like almost there. Like he's powering up for like a Super Saiyan moment or something. But he gets it within like four panels. So, the fact that he's kind of coming into his own gives me a little bit of hope with regards to the direction of Kyle Rayner, the character specifically. I have said for a long time I want him to be the torchbearer of some kind, and if that means he needs to be a White Lantern again, then let's do that. So I'm kind of getting what I want in a way there. It looks like that he's just going to not always be the White Lantern. It's just something that's a part of him that he'll be able to summon when he needs to. That's a nice power up to have in his back pocket if we ever tell any other stories with Kyle in the future. So that's something unique that's his and his alone. So that's interesting. I just don't want them to see. I just want him to them to showcase him getting a more and more better handle on it as things go forward, and not slipping back.
I would prefer him just to be just to be white. I prefer the opposite, actually. I wish he'd be a White Lantern all the time, but if he needs to take in one particular, if he needs to funnel one particular emotion, that he could basically become whatever lantern he needs to. I'm hoping that when the emotion, storytelling, the problem is with that explanation they gave us, like the last issue, is the fact that it doesn't make any sense based on anything we had seen before. And it was an explanation we needed after he was white and then went back to being not white. That's when we needed to say, oh, I really can be white. I just can't. I'm choosing not to because the emotional spectrum is so screwed up right now. It's basically it's too dangerous to channel all these runaway emotions. So I have to I just have to focus on green, staying green, so I'm not impacted by the fractured spectrum the same way. That would have been helpful earlier on. So I'm hoping maybe when the emotional spectrum is put back together again, that maybe he will stay white. Or like you said, the other option is probably, in all honesty, what they'll do is that when case of emergency, break glass, like he did in Green Lantern 18 in the series, when the emotional, kind of like the Captain Universe thing, when the emotional spectrum needs a champion, then it'll be Kyle.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know that there's anything else to focus on, because I know that the rest is going to take us a little bit. So, I guess maybe the Kelly stuff, Kelly and Ellie.
Kelly and Ellie.
I don't know where they're going with that, but they definitely did, you know, a pretty good job of hyping it up there with the end. So,
yeah, but let's see if what are the odds we're going to get resolution on that dangling Parsipal next issue? I mean,
they're definitely not, because Ellie has to come back to tell her what's going wrong, or something needs to go wrong with the gauntlet. before Kelly gets back. And the Ellie's not going to get back until the emotions are back, which is definitely not going to be fixed by next issue.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. So again, this is just going to drag on and on and on for a while. And trust me, if this ends with the gauntlet, her finally losing that damn gauntlet. Oh my God, I just shoot me, Chad. If this end, I'm fucking getting pissed. I'm not even that tired. I don't know what the hell's wrong.
I'm doing drugs, man.
No, I know. That was good. Maybe we'll keep that part in. If it ends with her losing that damn gauntlet, I'll be happy. But we know that they'll just give her a fucking Green Lantern ring anyway. So what does it matter? Even though I'd rather her have a ring, because at least then she's not special for no real reason of being special. I hope it's relevant. I hope they're not building this up for some stupid thing, which means absolutely nothing on the equivalent of a war turtle. That kind of Ulgrin. It was a little interesting, but again, tropes. It's like, let's wait long enough just so when you have the opportunity to just immediately say what you need to say, let's drag it out. So, of course, something happens and you can't. Yeah. It's like there's a lot of tropes in here, including how this issue begins is exactly kind of where we left off talking about, as you all know.
Yeah.
And so they're all guardians themselves. They all effing know this, literally. And which is funny because arguably, some of the things they say here, we didn't necessarily know. But all they really have to do is take off that "as you know" line. And actually, when you get to the splash page with the batteries and that little blurb before the Starbreaker Supremacy title, that actually gives you all you really need to know. So a lot of this shit on this page is completely irrelevant, some of it. But I did like the one fact that they pointed out, we kind of got released from the Source Lantern before we regained our memory. So I don't think they ever exactly told us that because they weren't cooked long enough, they didn't bake long enough, that's the reason why they were screwed up as they are. Not that we ever got an explanation for why they were growing inside the Source Lantern anyway. Like I said, that would have been a good tie into Kyle because of his torchbearer power, but heaven forbid you do so. That would be the most logical extension of the torchbearer thing, because we know Kyle has the power to bring back the Guardians. He was told he has the power to do that. So Kyle, even if it was subconsciously, could have, Onslaught, but you know what I mean, Oblivion, a subconscious thing that Kyle didn't even realize, but he reached out into the spectrum and he kind of like literally planted the seeds for them. But that's not, obviously this page is Mickey Mouse compared to what happens on the next two pages. Two pages later, because we get the Ellie Rose stuff. I almost forgot the Ellie Rose when we first talked about it last week. That I forgot the Ellie Rose stuff almost came first. So you want to delve into the biggest head scratching thing in this entire book? The reason why I zeroed in on saying that when you see the central power batteries on OR, you see seven. You see the green one, and then pretty much they're going in the order you would expect them to go. For the most part, to be fair, the dark side of the spectrum are not really in order, because you're going clockwise. You see orange, you see red, then you see yellow. So it's not really going in order. But the good batteries, quote unquote, are in order: blue, indigo, and sapphire. Now, the reason why this is a big problem, because we see all seven friggin' batteries, and then Guy just kind of mentions to Hal, it's like red, yellow, blue, indigo, orange. It's like, why not violet? Except we see a violet battery. And then Carol shows up and says, her point is somewhat valid, except for what she says. It's like, she basically says, because for some reason I'm still channeling the power, we don't want to do anything to potentially screw that up. Okay, that would make sense, except she says, we don't want to risk building it. Except the fucking thing is built. We see it in the beginning. We see it at the end. So there's a problem here. If you just said, if she said, we just don't want to power it, then you can have an excuse, maybe, well, there's a battery, but it's not going to be powered up. And as long as they're consistent at the end, that the other five batteries come online, or the other six, five batteries come online, and that one doesn't, okay. She says it's dangerous to just build it, except it's built.
Yeah.
So what this means, and we talked about this last issue related to Core, there's some basic problems here besides the fact that editorial is absolutely crapping the bed. there's the fact that either Jeremy is not making himself crystal clear in how he's giving these instructions to the artist, or the artist is misunderstanding something and there's a miscommunication. But this can't happen, not on the same two pages, and then happen again at the end. This makes no sense. And if we get some kind of half-ass explanation 5 issues down the road, or even next issue, I'm sure it won't be next issue. We would be lucky to get a next issue. But if we get another half-ass explanation of, oh, this, which would probably be lampshading at this point, which we will come back to and talk about your question, your point about lampshading, whether it is or isn't, about another point in this book. I don't know what to tell you, but this is not good. This is not good storytelling and good, whether it's Jeremy's fault, the writing fault, and it's certainly editorial's fault. This shouldn't be happening, because we shouldn't have to be going, okay, this is a mistake. They're telling us based on what we're reading, it's a mistake, and it's a good way to take you out of the story, literally right when the story begins. So I don't get it. But
yeah, to me, I think it might be, yeah, it's either Zermanico or Jeremy, but it's definitely editorial. In terms of how the mistake happened, it's one of the two.
Yep.
In terms of it making publication, it's editorial. So it's maybe one of the other two's fault, but it's definitely editorial's fault.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
like you said, pointing the blame for how you got to that, how the mistake came to be, is up in the air. It could be both. They may not be great at communicating things. They may
could be a language barrier. I don't know.
I was going to say that, but I don't know enough about
Genetica. I don't know about
Yeah. So, but the reality is, there's something that's not necessarily literally, but there's something that's being lost in translation with what Jeremy's writing, or Zermanico just, in this case, got confused about what basically what the assignment was based on where the story was, but it doesn't make a lot of sense, because if I don't know, it's really hard to understand how this happens, it's a real big problem, and again, these things create issues, and we'll talk about that when we get to the Aya thing, because it does again raise the question, whosever fault it is, then it almost forces it to be a lampshading thing, because Jeremy then, even if that was not his original intent, then somehow has to write something into the story, probably, likelihood, to try to justify the mistake, and then it becomes lampshading, when it maybe should never have happened to begin with in this case, but now we see it, so you almost have to touch upon it, because how do you explain that?
Yeah.
How do you ignore it, I should say? How do you ignore it?
Yeah. Zermanico, by the way, is from Spain.
Spanish.
I don't know if he's currently living there, if that's his descent, that's his origins, and he's living in the U.S. That part I don't know, but he is Spanish, so that's what we were talking about. I am less mad at Zermanico and Jeremy for this, specifically for this error, with the extra power battery, because the problem is either the power battery being there or Carol's actual script. So yes, it's one of the two. But mistakes happen quite often, more than people realize, in works for the big two or any published work. But it's the job of editorial to catch that before it goes to publication. So do mistakes happen? Yes, but we have a process of checks and balances in place before something reaches the consumer that helps alleviate those. This is a big fuck up in terms of editorial not doing the job, which we've had editorial misses before, and it's starting to be triggering. So, another thing really quickly. No mention of Happy here either, guys. We talked about it last episode. It didn't happen in 24, which was the issue they explicitly tagged to reference, and it didn't happen here. No mention of Happy. No mention that he disappeared. No mention of anything on the trip, I guess, from Earth to Oa that these two made. Happy is not here whatsoever. So there's that. Aya, I'm calming down on this a little bit. But Aya says, you know, after she's like, hey, thanks for setting me free, and introduces herself, her first question is, why have you been flying the Interceptor backwards? I was initially really pissed about this, but I thought about it a little bit more. I'm still aggravated at it. Because Kyle's response is, to be fair, it didn't come with an instruction manual. And Connor says, didn't Hal pilot it that way? Which is a reference to the other times we've seen the Interceptor in comics, in which case it was flown backwards. So Jeremy knows this, but when did he know this is crazy. So like, he knows, obviously, his work on the animated series, he knows. But since he knew that it was being piloted backwards in the original adaptations of it, either A, did he know about it being interpreted into comics before he started the book, or did he think he was using the Interceptor for the first time when he wrote it, and it was only afterwards, kind of like how, aren't we the ones responsible for telling Philip Kennedy Johnson about Ellie Rose? Like, he didn't know about Rose being John's sister until we told him, right?
I think that is true. I think you said that.
Because it was then later on that we got the whole Ellie Rose reveal, right?
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why she was named Ellie Rose, because of the fact that because they were trying to keep the continuity correct, because his sister was named Rose the last time we the only other time we really got that story when she died was.
Okay, so sort of the same thing. It's possible that Jeremy didn't know about the Interceptor being adapted. So like, he's figuring out a way to address it in the comic book, as opposed to, you would think, if he knew about those one or two issues that the Interceptor actually had shown up in comics before, you would think that the first time the Interceptor showed up, he would just go ahead and just, you know, oh, it's only showed up twice, we're just going to fix that real quick behind the scenes, flip it around, there we go, boom. Awesome. But him doing it intentionally all of this time, just to make a joke about it later on, that implies a bit of malice I'm not ready to put on him. I don't think that's fair. So I think what happened here is, he thought he was bringing the Interceptor in for the first time, but I don't know. But then why was it backwards? I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
Wasn't the first time we saw it in this book?
Backwards, yeah.
Regardless, was the Interceptor in a comic book before the Jeremy Adams run?
Yes.
When?
Remember when War of the Green Lanterns was going on with Krona, and Hal told Guy to meet him on that ice planet before they headed to Oa to confront Krona, and that was where they hopped on the Interceptor?
You're saying it. I remember the scene.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a big like knockdown drag out fight in the snow, and then they went down and the Interceptor was downstairs.
But we actually see them flying it at some point?
Backwards. Yeah. Backwards.
The correct way.
No, the backwards.
Wrong way. The wrong way. Okay. Okay. And that was definitely after the animated show, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it was The Interceptor had already made its appearance in the animated form.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm no matter how you slice it, none of this makes sense, really, because Jeremy knows the way we're supposed to be flown to begin with. And realistically, Hal should know all along how it was supposed to be flown, because he was in the animated show. That's the problem. So if I had to guess, I'm going to guess this was another miscommunication issue between whether it was Romanico and him, or whoever drew that issue, that regardless of what the instructions were, that they looked at the ship and they said, oh, this is the way it has to fly. And maybe didn't pay much attention, or maybe they didn't watch maybe he wanted them to watch a clip and they didn't. Either way,
his reference material was the previous issues that I just mentioned.
Yeah, but that would be dumb if he knew. That would, again, That only works if you believe he was doing this, like what you say you don't believe, that he was doing this on purpose, essentially to set up the gag. But yes, it is absolutely possible it could have been done on purpose to do that because quote unquote, it keeps the continuity in the books, even though the continuity shouldn't have been that. So it's possible he did that. It is possible he did that. But again, it doesn't explain perpetuating the mistake of Hal flying it backwards is a problem. So I don't know. My instinct, and it could be wrong, tells me that I think the art in the series was a mistake, and they showed Hal flying it backwards, then everybody was flying it backwards. Or by the time they realized Hal was flying it backwards, it was already published, and now they had to figure out how to reconcile that in story. When some people are the diehard fans who are going to notice of the animated show, who are going to notice, okay, this is a mistake. So Jeremy felt like he had to acknowledge it. Just like if we get an explanation down the road of why we're seeing a sapphire battery, even though Carol's telling us that it's not even safe to build it. That if we get an explanation of that, it's probably because he knows now that this mistake made its way out, and you have to acknowledge it. You can't pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah. To be very clear, it sounds like I'm ranting and raving. This doesn't make me as mad as what we talked about with the batteries earlier.
Yeah, the batteries are a much bigger problem because, in all honesty, there are people who really like the animated show, and I like the animated show. I didn't catch that. A lot of people wouldn't have caught that. And in all honesty, you could just say you could even come up with some in-story explanation for now why it's flying back. You could have done that. Yeah. He's just addressing it.
It's nice that it's being addressed.
It's another log on the fire. But the power battery thing is a much bigger problem because of the fact it's a blatant plot hole based on what you literally on two pages facing each other. You're seeing something that completely contradicts with what another character is telling you, and it's like, okay, which one's correct, and why are these things in conflict?
I think, though, unless you have something else, I think there's a more egregious mistake in this issue. And I don't think it's necessarily a mistake, because I think what we talked about with a battery, like it's either artistic or it's scripting, but it's definitely editorial. Somebody made a mistake. What I'm about to talk about is intentional. So before we get to that, is there anything else about this issue you wanted to touch on? Because I haven't heard you bring this up, but maybe you know what I'm talking about. I'm about to freak out.
All right, just go. Freak out. Make yourself happy.
So the problem I have is jealousy, disgust, and envy. We have, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm about to go off. We have not seen jealousy or envy either as characters or concepts up until this point.
Correct.
So we only built off disgust.
And sorrow, but yes.
And sorrow.
The story is called Fractured Spectrum.
Not anymore. We've moved beyond that.
No. The story is called Fractured Spectrum. So you started off with sorrow. Great. That's interesting. We talked about the implications of that, so on and so forth. Cool. Interesting thread. What else you got? And then it took forever for us to get anything. And then we're like, oh, okay, well, maybe freaking we got the disgust hint, and then we got nothing else, and disgust was just a hint. We never saw anything with disgust ever again beyond that up until now. And you built two entire new, quote unquote, because they're roughly the same thing, emotions with lanterns and powers of their own and stuff, and just threw them into the story. And it happened off screen.
Where to go with this? Jeremy, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. How about that? Because, look, the story is called Fractured Spectrum. Therefore, the most critical, interesting part of said plot is the results of said spectrum being fractured. We have been focusing on almost exclusively what happens when random people feel the emotions we're already familiar with
instead of focusing more on or showcasing more of these new emotions, which are by default more interesting. I'm just going to say it. I'm sorry. That's what it is. We have a good foundation with sorrow. Okay. But we have been wondering this entire time, when are we going to see another one? And then almost half or more of the ones we have seen have just had stuff happen entirely off panel. First, it was Happy disappearing. He disappeared. He was a highly critical thing that could turn the tide in this battle. They had said all that bullshit on the panel. And then he just disappeared, and it happened off panel. And now,
but even Happy being created happened off panel.
Yeah. And then now we have these other two lanterns who we've never met their character, never saw them develop the emotion, don't know anything about how the emotion works. And here's the other part of that. Because now we're transitioning from Fractured Spectrum to whatever the hell, the Starbreaker Core War or whatever the hell.
Supremacy.
Yeah. We're focused now then on Supremacy and Starbreaker and his people. And I don't feel like we're going to be focusing then too much on these other emotions, if they're even still being felt. Was this all, again, we have yet to see it. We got to see how it works. Did Starbreaker pull the rug out from under the sorrow in them, and they also are emotionless? Maybe. But we'll have to wait till 26 or Core to see, but it's possible. If there are no emotions, then even the fractured ones probably shouldn't be working. But again, we got to see the results of that. So I can only go off of what we have. The fact that something called Fractured Spectrum had the most interesting parts of the idea of a Fractured Spectrum happen off panel is irritating as hell. It's a choice. It's an intentional choice. I'm sorry. I don't think it's the right choice.
When you think about it, let's be honest. Pretty much, other than getting ambushed like everybody else has been, the entire point of Kyle's side mission was just to get Aya into the story.
Yep.
Had nothing to do really with the Fractured Spectrum. It just was an excuse for him to bring Aya into physical form back into the story. So that's why I always push back on, as we will talk about sales in a few minutes, when Comic Book Revolution always keeps putting the blame on Kyle because they're focusing on Kyle, and that's one of the reasons why the book is not selling, in their opinion. It's not, to me, it's not that they're using Kyle, it's how they're using Kyle. They're not using Kyle in any kind of interesting way. So yeah, it probably will bring the book down in the eyes of many people because nobody cares about the side mission that he's on or the people that he's working with. Connor maybe a little bit, but everybody else, Scarab and what the hell's her name? Odyssey. Nobody cares. We have Hal, which bothers me too, and this was a little bit in this issue. I'm kind of getting sick and tired of Hal acting like a schoolboy with Carol. It's just a little too much of a switch flip that Hal is all giddy and like, oh my God, I can't wait to see her now. I mean,
I see what you mean. I see it happening. Like, I see it on page. I've noticed it. I don't have as much of a problem because it's finally working for him. Like he's
fine. I know, but I mean,
yeah.
And
I get it. Yeah.
I was going to say, I can understand maybe a little bit of the maturity aspect of both of them in theory, Carol and Hal, now being able to understand each walking in each other's shoes a little bit more. I can conceptually understand it. I don't see, I mean, you can make a case as refreshing, but it also seems it's pretty convenient. Like that whole side, like it makes that whole side mission now that had us introduced to Happy, it makes it even more irrelevant because Hal should have been on his way back to Oa to begin with. He shouldn't have even been stopping to see Carol because he's got bigger fish to fry. And then, but it seemed like, oh, you know, well, it was self-serving, but it got us Happy, and Happy might be a key to turning the tide. And who knows, maybe Happy is important, maybe Happy got himself out of there because he knew something was going to happen, or maybe somebody else took Happy out of there on purpose to protect him because they knew what was about to happen. or they knew that he was kind of critically important. We have to put him somewhere or in something. To me, going back to the power battery screw up, that I would be surprised if the explanation we don't get for why Carol's power is working is because of Predator, which probably will be the solution or the key to solving this problem, is that if all the entities are back, or at least, I mean, let's be honest, we know Parallax didn't leave because we have Parallaxes up the wazoo. We have at least three Parallaxes to choose from. But according to the cover, at least we already knew Predator's back. But Ion is supposed to be back too. So if we work under the belief that either all the entities are back, or at least those entities are back, then that would indicate that that part of the spectrum should still be working. And that might be the key to them winning, because even though the power battery isn't there to collect the power anymore, or it is, the power batteries are there, but I guess we can assume they're being drained. They're being drained by Starbreaker's battery. So it's kind of like all the energy, all the emotional energy that's in those batteries or collecting in those batteries is getting funneled directly into Starbreaker's battery so his people can feed. That the entities are still going to be a source to be able to of emotional power, and that will very likely be a key part of the resolution of this. But still, I of all the things here, that's the one that's the hardest thing to get over, because it's such a major plot hole. It really doesn't make a whole lick of sense here, and it's tough and it's kind of hard. I mean, you're somewhat interested to see what the status quo is immediately after the events of this issue, but it's also getting to the point where it's kind of hard to get your hopes up that things other than an issue or two, because we've gotten an occasional good issue, like a couple of issues ago was really good. The reality is it's kind of hard to get your hopes up too high with the fact that we kind of see the writing on the wall, the way this book has been going now, the way the stories are being told. And there's a little bit too much venditti in what's going on here. And from the sense of the promise of some of these ideas that are being introduced don't seem to really be paying off very well. And obviously, to be blunt, there wasn't a whole lot of promise in the first arc to begin with, because, again,
just kept kicking the can, which were still some of those.
Yes, they kicked the can way too long. But I mean, the mere concept of building, even if you didn't originally think it was going to be like an 18-issue arc with specials thrown in, the reality is, which I went back and read Night Terrors the other day for some reason. Don't ask me why. But the reality is, because I was putting a comic away, and then two issues happened to be there, and that's why I took them out, because I'd never opened them before, because we reviewed them off the digital. That the reality is, anybody who thought that building a story arc around the United Planets and the Durlans and thought that was going to be particularly interesting, I mean, that was one of the, I mean, that's something he should have learned from Robert Venditti's run, because that was such a horrible way to begin. I mean, the lights out thing was good, but the whole Durlan thing was horrible. I don't know. I'm kind of concerned with where this is going. There's still potential here. If we could get, I mean, you would think, I mean, honestly, the one entity you think that could really turn the tide in all of this would be Adara, because Adara should be able to supercharge everybody. But what are the odds we're going to even see Adara, considering how they take these big steamers on Blue Lanterns across the board continuously? What are the odds that the Blues are going to even have an appearance in this or do anything in consequence? It's almost like it's like, It's so frustrating. Almost pretty much every other core, with maybe you could say the exception of Indigo lately, that almost every other core has their moments in the sun, but the Blues just never get anything except wiped out constantly. Sapphires do. We see Orange, Atrocitus. Yeah, he's they made him into a loser, which I really don't like, but at least we see him all the time, and at least he's trying. But I don't know. We'll see how this goes. I don't think Starbreaker is particularly interesting to me anyway. So you kind of alluded to the actual idea of the spectrum being broken and what that meant and how it was going to affect the parts that we knew, besides what parts were going to be created that were brand new. That's what made it interesting. And we kind of picked up on this early on once the fractured spectrum thing was going on. It's like, we ain't getting much fractured spectrum. We're getting a whole lot of side missions. We're getting a whole lot of stuff that doesn't seem particularly. It becomes a MacGuffin chase issue after issue after issue, only for them to lose every single time because they get cut off at the pass by the bad guys who are always one step ahead. And now here we are. I guess we can hit. Maybe we can keep our fingers crossed that the opening dialogue or monologue with the Guardians about the idea that the old Guardians would have had a failsafe for this, and but the odds of us discovering it in time are pretty much remote. Well, maybe that's almost like the dangling the carrot. Maybe that's exactly what's going to happen. That the Guardians did have a failsafe for a plan like this, and that's what's going to get them out. Maybe it is related to the entities.
The problem I have is everything we've talked about, of course. But also, guys, like, it sounds like I just hate this book. I'm upset about it. I'm disappointed in lots of issues. I still think this might be one of the best GL titles we've had in a long time, which is not saying much and saying everything at the same time. It's a beautiful book, especially when Zermanico's doing his thing with peak coloring and stuff. I keep paging back and forth on these panels from Amethyst, from Gemworld, specifically the dragon sequence stuff, and Carol's jet construct and everything. It's a gorgeous book in lots of times. And then we all know how obsessed I am with DC, you know, appearances and world building and stuff. Say what you want about Amethyst and Gemworld and that whole side of the DC universe. We dedicated an issue to it. We went there. We saw Zoriel, we saw Phantom Stranger, we've seen the Spectre, we've seen all the other characters in the DC universe that we've encountered thus far. I can't even name them all. And you know, Hal and Carol's relationship is finally being explored in an interesting way, because as I've said before on multiple episodes of this show, I don't believe that Hal and Carol can operate as a, you know, power couple for as in the DCU. And I don't mean just as characters. I just mean among fandom, you cannot put Hal and Carol in the same weight class as a relationship between Clark and Lois, or Barry and Iris, or Sue Sue and Ralph. Those are like the tentpole relationships in the DC universe, and Hal and Carol's relationship, frankly, does not hold a candle. I've never understood why it has to be her other than history, because it's always been Hal and Carol, but I've never been convinced that they belong together. But they're doing something with that relationship here, so kudos there. There's lots of different kudos I can give this book, but it's frustrating to have the rug pulled out from under me so many different times with some of the things they're choosing to do, and it's getting irritating. Ironically, you said the Starbreaker stuff you weren't that much interested in. I was interested in it only from the perspective of the Starbreaker as a character. The pitch of the character is that he's like an energy vampire, and one of the things he feeds on is emotions. So that had like a whole big potential, like, oh, that's interesting to play with him with in regards to emotional spectrum. But we were focused on the fractured spectrum, and he wasn't doing any emotion absorbing or anything, or feeding or whatever you want to call it, in this story. Ironically, we have, with the Starbreaker supremacy and the fact that there are no emotions, apparently, based on the end of this particular issue, there we have a capacity to actually be more entertained by Starbreaker, more so now than we did before. So, I don't know. So it almost felt like Starbreaker was wasted only in the sense that I guess he's just a puppeteer pulling the strings behind everything until he gets to the point where now he becomes more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there is a chance it could be more interesting now that his plan is kind of come to fruition, but it also could be less interesting.
Yeah.
It could very easily be less interesting, but I'm hoping it won't be. But, I mean, as far as something you said about whether I would remember, Nate says something in this issue about the fact that he's trying to, that he's well aware that his goal is basically to try not to feel anything. So yeah. I think he knows that if Starbreaker succeeds, that he's going to feel absolutely nothing. Now, what that actually translates to in a living emotional being that has that emotional thing ripped away from them, that's another story, and that's probably where the rub's going to be, as it's because something's not going to play the way maybe he thought it was, or how it was sold to him. But because you know it's again this we do fall into tropes a lot in this book that it'd be very difficult to believe that we don't find out that Starbreaker basically sold all these other lanterns a bill of goods that wasn't quite true. That he told them some things that were true, but he conveniently left out other things that kind of almost negate the other aspect of it. It's like, I'll take your pain away. You won't feel you know, wronged anymore, and the strong feeling, whichever emotion happens to be that's driving you, you'll have peace. But what does that actually mean and translate to? So you can it would be stunning if we didn't have something like that. I want to see how Kyle's affected by this, since Kyle was the most, once again, not just in general, but in this issue, going white again, he was the one who was most tapped into the emotional spectrum. It is interesting that we didn't see anybody lose their uniforms on this. That's why I went back and double checked before we were talking about, you know, in context with Sorrow and everything, that we didn't see anybody on or lose their uniforms. Speaking of which, I know on a cover down the road, we kind of see Lord Flees again. But how many issues now has it been since, 18, since the last time we saw Shepherd? Wouldn't it have been nice to at least know what happened to Shepherd? Even if it was him going back to his own universe. Wouldn't that have been nice as opposed to, oh, we're just going to kind of sweep him under the rug? It's like, like St. Walker or somebody. Or anybody. Arkillo, right? We haven't seen Arkillo in forever. Where the hell's Arkillo? But the point is, at least we knew that, what's his face, was on Oa. We know Shepherd was on Oa. Because he was an active participant in some way, shape, or form at the end of the last arc. And now it's like he didn't even exist. I don't know. It's getting harder to be enthused. Let's put it that way about the direction and the little things about Happy and, see issue 24, which has nothing to do with what you're telling us happened in issue 24. And then not giving us a backstory on some things that are kind of important to know. And I don't know. It's odd.
Yeah. That's it. What else we got?
All right, so let's do some Green Lantern sales, because I think these came out last week. So, and we really didn't. I think it was after we did our issue review, so it wasn't really viable to talk about. So let's talk about the relatively good news that actually two issues of Green Lantern are technically ranked on this chart. Take that back. Two issues of Absolute Green Lantern are on this chart because based on when they came out, they must have both fallen within that month. Or calendar months of each other. So Absolute Green Lantern number 3 was number 12. So that sold. That was outside the top 10. And Absolute Green Lantern number 4, for some reason, was all the way down to number 53, which is odd. So that seems like an aberration, and a lot of people think it is. So we'll have to see where Absolute Green Lantern number 5 sells to see if it kind of moves back up again, to see if it's kind of a trend or it's an outlier. But that's the first even small hint that maybe Absolute Green Lantern is not going to be consistently selling well, not all the Absolute books sell fantastically. They sell well compared to most of the other regular titles with the same characters, but pretty much not all of them are in the top 10 over and over and over again. But now Green Lantern has dropped out of the top 10, and obviously this one was not in the top 50. So that's the good news. Now let's start delving into the worst news. Green Lantern 24 was 144 on the ICB2 charts, which technically is an improvement, as sad as that is, because the month before issue 23 was number 148. Green Lantern Corps number 5, however, plummeted from 111 down to 147. So that's two major drops in a row, I think, for that book in back-to-back months. And Green Lantern Dark, after a slight little upkick for number 4, just completely dropped out of the top 200 and was unranked. Number 5 was. So not a whole lot of good news. It continues to be pretty much Absolute Green Lantern is selling, and the other books are not. So
I'm pretty sure then that drop for Dark then just confirms what I said the last time we spoke about it in terms of it got the bat bump.
And that's probably true. I would bet on that. But there's also a chance, at least partially influenced by the fact that people might have been interested, more willing to buy it because of the bat bump, and then they just read it like, I don't get it because they hadn't been reading it, or they didn't care, and they said, okay, I bought this issue, I don't need to buy the next issue. But yeah. Which often happens, which is one of the reasons why number one issues almost always, except for the case of Absolute Green Lantern, almost always sell better number one than number two, because you're going to have a bunch of people who jump in on the ground floor for issue one, but then either weren't overly thrilled with it or just weren't not convinced enough, well, I need to start buying this monthly. So it, but there are reasons. But yeah, it's obviously not good. The Green Lantern has pretty consistently been a bad seller, with the exception, I think, of one issue. And even that issue wasn't great. I think that issue put a took us back into the top 100, I think. But it wasn't. But it still wasn't good. It's Green Lantern Corps. It seems like potentially it's kind of been free falling after a decent beginning. That it seems like, which is possible, because let's be honest, we have that book seems to that book. You could very easily see why that book could start hemorrhaging, potentially too. But that that's it for sales.
Speaking of Absolute doing well, this is actually very ironic because this happened during our break between segments here. I was just passing the 10 minutes over on TikTok, and I've mentioned in passing a couple of times, because I don't think there's I don't think the crossover is between our fans or listeners or whatever you want to call them, and what they are interested in is necessarily there. But I watch a lot of streamers, game streamers like on Twitch and stuff. And one of the people I watch is Sidion, Sydney, who is a part of the Offline TV group, for anybody out there who's listening. And she had just posted a TikTok where she had said that because of her enjoyment of Superman and everything, she grew up as a comic book fan, but got out of it, you know, like most people do during college and stuff like that. And she went to the comic. She found finally found a comic book store in L.A. that she liked. So she picked up some books today, and she picked up all of Absolute Green Lantern. She'd been hearing good things from other comic book fans who hadn't left the hobby like she had about Absolute. And one of the things she specifically wanted to pick up was an Absolute title. She said she'd never read a Green Lantern book before. But this is a woman who's comic book versed overall as a fan. She does cosplay and stuff like that too. But it was so weird. This of my world just crossing briefly, because yes, the Absolute titles are having their own little bump, because there are people who are jumping into that in a very interesting way. And I don't think this, like, you know, Sydney is not necessarily, and this is no insult to her, it's not like she's a tastemaker or something. And suddenly, because she says it, she's going to, everybody's going to start buying Absolute Green Lantern. But it's just interesting that the Absolute titles have become this pathway for some people back into comics or whatever, and they're performing well for lots of different reasons. One, because it's obviously the new thing. It's an easy jumping on point. It's its own universe. Whatever you want to say about it, it's interesting that it's still selling well on those charts, and that seems to be reflected in reality.
Yeah, I think so. Again, where it all ends, again, depending how long these series go and eventually what they're going to do with the stuff, that remains. But it is worth noting that, again, in a sea of despair, that's like the only life preserver out there so far are the Absolute Green Lantern books, compared to the other, which is not good for us at the majority of the, not the majority, all at the moment, according to at least what these sales take from them or this data as you will. But none of them are selling, not well. And there may not be a huge drop off. Again, there just isn't a lot of buzz one way or the other.
Now, just not good when all the attention is on Green Lantern right now.
Now, mind you, there is a chance potentially, maybe a little bit of Superman bump could help some of the Green Lantern books at some point, or at the very least, maybe the Lantern show. And who knows, if they're smart, maybe they will time a book or a new book or something around the time, even though, of course, unfortunately for us, it would be a Jon Stewart book in all likelihood, which, again, there's no evidence that a Jon Stewart book is ever going to sell, because they never really have. But one way or the other, even if it's a miniseries, do something new around the time next summer when Lanterns comes out. That's a possibility. But it is what it is. So related to that, since there is no What Mark Has Seen, because What Mark Has Seen is Fantastic Four, and that is, knock on wood, barring act of God, that is what Chad and I, because Chad's actually seen three friggin' movies in July, which is like the earth is tilting off its axis right now, that we will actually be doing our Fantastic Four review episode next week, with, if all goes well, with Dan. Dan, who would have been a part of the Superman episode, but he saw it too late in the game. But this time it falls perfectly into place where, barring again an act of God, he will join that. But speaking of that, Fantastic Four, that, and we'll have more to say. There'll be more information to talk about next week. From a box office perspective, did Fantastic Four do fantastic? Bum bum. No, it did good, or did okay. It was not stellar. It basically did slightly less than Guardians of the Galaxy 3 did on opening weekend, which was a disappointment. But of course, it was a disappointment compared to what Guardians 2 did. But this opened up weaker than Superman when it looked like it was at least going to open up the same as Superman. It did. So it had a bigger drop off on Saturday and Sunday than Superman. It also had a weaker Monday than Superman did, and a Monday to Monday comparison. So we don't know how Fantastic Four is going to hold up. There's still a chance Fantastic Four may be a lot more front loaded than Superman. And then the narrative could change dramatically about what this movie means from a financial perspective. I was planning on talking about this anyway. The one thing that bothered me, I was watching a video today. I think it was, I'll find the name of the YouTube channel. Not that it really matters, but I do watch them fairly often, and I don't always agree with, you know, their take on stuff. But I thought the spin they were doing today was particularly unfair from the perspective that they were talking about Fantastic Four, and they were saying, well, it performed, like I mentioned, it performed worse than Superman's Monday on a Monday to Monday comparison. But then they mentioned, oh, it also performed worse than Quantumania's opening Monday. Its first Monday, and it did worse than Brave New World's first Monday, without once mentioning those were holiday Mondays, because both those two movies opened up on President's Day weekend. So it's not an apples to apples comparison. If this was a 4-day weekend, a holiday Monday, I'm sure Fantastic Four would have made more money than both Brave New World and Quantumania. I know the adjustment for inflation thing when it comes to Quantumania may have, you know, could balance it ever slightly, but I thought that was unfair because of the fact that, again, it's WDW Pro. That's the name of the YouTube channel. That I thought that was a particularly unfair spin on this, because it's like they're conveniently ignoring that it's not an apples to apples comparison. Now, is it a bad sign that it was like $2.5 million weaker than Superman on Monday to Monday comparison? Yeah, that's not a good sign at all. That's a fair alarm sounding or ringing the bell, but it's not fair to throw and make it sound like, oh my God, everybody hated Quantumania, nobody liked Brave New World, and it made less money. Yeah, but it was a 4-day holiday weekend, so you can't compare those Mondays. It's unfair. But we will have a better idea what Fantastic Four is doing box office wise when we do our review, when we record this next week. And then we'll see if there's going to be a clear line of demarcation between Superman and Fantastic Four from a box office perspective. And it's also interesting that, in a way, I guess it would have been the safer bet, but I don't know if I ever would have really believed that Jurassic World was going to be the winner of those three from a box office perspective. But it clearly is. Jurassic World is pretty much guaranteed now to be the winner of the two things that we probably know for a fact now after where we stand, is Jurassic World is going to be the winner of those three July blockbusters, and that Lilo and Stitch is probably all but a lock now to be the biggest moneymaker of the summer, because it probably will be the only movie to make $1 billion during the summer movie going season, since Jurassic, I don't think Jurassic has any chance to get there because it's only in the 700s. So that's all I got.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and close it out.
Alrighty, so if you'd like to contact us, lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. You can use #GLcast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys, we'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.